Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of My First Sketch at MyFirstSketch.com. I'm Josh Hyam. Feel free to email me at josh@myfirstsketch.com with any questions, thoughts, recommendations, anything about comedy, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. You can like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/myfirstsketch. And it'd be really cool if you did the whole 5 stars leave a review thing on whatever platform you get the podcast. So I've been talking about it a lot over the last month or so. Toronto Sketch Fest enters their final weekend. So many shows with so many awesome acts remaining. All the details at torontosketchfest.com. Shows until the 19th. And this one I haven't really mentioned before, but submissions for our friends at Montreal Sketch Fest are still open. You have about a week left to submit your act for their festival, which takes place May 4th through the 13th. That's one of those festivals that I haven't been to yet, but pretty much all accounts say it's fantastic and wonderful experience, so maybe check it out. All the details for them are at montrealsketchfest.com. But today we're heading back to Washington, D.C. Today's guest is Elizabeth Leff, currently a member of Lots of Feelings, which originally started in Washington, D.C., although Elizabeth now lives in upstate New York. Lots of Feelings will be performing along with Amanda Zeller at Bad Medicine Presents this Saturday, March 18th at the D.C. Improv in the Lounge for 2 shows, 7 p.m., 9:30 p.m. And tickets are available at dcimprov.com. Elizabeth's first sketch is a commercial parody entitled Connect With Your Past. Elizabeth and I read the 2 actors doing testimonials. I'm also the narrator of the commercial, and Elizabeth gives you all the visual information that you need to know. So let's go to the sketch.
Slow motion shot of person one staring out into the distance while their child plays in the yard in front of them. Cut to person one sitting positioned in a documentary style interview, emotional music playing. It feels wild. I grew up feeling disconnected from my past, and I joked that at least my intergenerational trauma or crippling digestive issues were ways to connect to my ancestors. But now that I have answers, it's like I just can't believe I didn't know what I was missing. Dissolve to slow motion shot of person two sitting at a table with a plate of celery looking sad while their surrounding friends eat lobster and laugh. Cut to person two sitting positioned in a documentary style interview.
I've dealt with a series of allergies my whole life, and I always shook it off as just another thing about me that I and everyone in my life just have to deal with. But now I know that there's so much more behind it.
Cut to uplifting music plays, a series of joyous scenes fade in and out, with person one playing with their family and person two playing with their hypoallergenic fish.
Uncover the most telling chapters of your family history with Ancestry. Search through hundreds of years of family records that reveal the most important relationships in determining your health outcomes for free at Ancestry.com.
Cut to person one holding their child's hand in their yard. The child is bending down and picking up flowers while person one is speaking into the camera. For years, I felt lost, like I couldn't quite connect with those around me. I wasn't able to explain it. I always knew there was more to my background than my parents were telling me. And thanks to Ancestry.com, I've been able to become so much more intimate with those members of my family who came before me. Dissolve to person two pulling a wagon that's holding their fishbowl and walking down the street while speaking into the camera.
Growing up, the other kids would laugh at me while I was quarantined at lunch during lunch hour. And while I knew that living in a bubble was for my own protection, I always needed a better answer as to why. Once I found out that my parents were first cousins, my life started making a lot more sense. Relatively speaking.
Cut to graphics of complex circular family trees and clearly distorted strands of DNA fading in and out.
Ancestry examines your family history to explain the combination of characteristics that you call you. And you can take comfort in knowing that you're never alone, because when we say you're one of a kind, remember, the world is actually filled with hundreds of other people with DNA frighteningly similar to you.
Cut to person two walking up to someone who looks like they could be their sibling, giving them a hug.
Ancestry also welcomes you to sign up for our dating app that matches users with people specifically set to counteract centuries of inbreeding.
Cut to person two on their phone. A message pops up saying, "No matches found. Please expand your search radius." Cut to screen showing the Ancestry.com logo, website, and promotion code.
Ancestry.com. Are you ready to find out who's really inside of you? Use this promotion code online today to access archive levelers using our friends and family discount.
Blackout.
Are you a fan of sketch comedy like Monty Python, Key and Peele, and Saturday Night Live? Have you ever wondered why their sketches are funny? Or maybe why that certain sketch didn't make you laugh? On the comedy podcast Sketch Nerds, we aim to answer those questions while having fun talking about the history and craft of sketch comedy. Every episode features a guest to help us break down our favorite sketches, as well as those submitted by listeners like you. So come nerd out with us and listen to Sketch Nerds at badmedicinecomedy.com/sketchnerds.
My name is Samantha Russell. I'm a sketch comedian, and I have a prop and costume hoarding problem. So I figured the best way to get it under control is to start a podcast. On Should I Keep This? I chat with other comedians about their experiences in comedy and our insane prop and costume collections. And on each episode, we both bring a beloved item to discuss whether it's a treasure or just trash. Sometimes it turns out no matter how much money or time we spent on a prop, the only thing we should be holding on to are the memories we've made along the way. So check out Should I Keep This? We have new episodes every 2 weeks available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi.
So tell me about the sketch. Where does this idea come from?
Oh, I don't know. I have still a running notes app or note in my phone on the notes app with just like random, stupid, silly things I think of. And this was definitely just one of those, like maybe I saw an Ancestry.com commercial or ad or something. And I don't know what in my brain thought Ancestry, but I just thought immediately that that'd be a funny commercial idea specifically because there's so much you can do with that.
For one, it feels like it's one of those ideas that like, it feels like almost someone should have done it already.
I agree.
Like, I had this idea back in my first sketch class about a car commercial that's like, it's basically like 80 puns about Chevy Chase. And the car is a Chevrolet Chase.
Yeah.
And I had the same thing. I was like, how has no one done this yet? Like,
right.
I can't be the first person to think this.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you.
I remember there's a story about like apparently in Iceland, I don't want to say they're incestuous, but like it's a very like close-knit, tight country, like family-wise, that there are actually apps to make sure you're not meeting like a cousin within a couple of rings of your family. Like,
really?
Yeah.
I did not know this. I live in a very small, I'm from a very small community in upstate New York. And I wasn't born here, but a lot of people would like in high school be like, oh, I can't date them because they're related to me. Oh, I can't date that person either. It's just like.
So you wrote this for a class?
Yeah, so it was my first ever sketch writing class. It was in Washington, D.C. And that's where I met Bobby, actually. So he read this and thought, I like her. That's a good sign, I guess.
Where was this class? And
at Dojo Comedy with the great Murphy McHugh, who is still a great, you know, teacher, mentor, etc. And yeah, our first week was blackouts, and I wrote a couple silly blackouts. But then this was week two, commercials. So we all wrote a commercial and brought it in. And yeah, I also, reading it back is interesting too, because I like the intergenerational trauma and digestive issues. I'm Jewish, and so I was just talking about this with friends as well, of like, it's not an incest thing, but it is a lack of biodiversity thing, right? Of like,
yeah,
my digestive issues can certainly be, you know, traced or blamed on, you know, a certain family history. And obviously the trauma, but that's another conversation.
I'm curious because, so you make it sound like you take this class and you have to write right away. Because
yes,
like in my Sketch 101 and 201 classes, we actually like watched things and broke things down and tried to understand certain parts of it. You actually went in and like had homework first week.
Yeah. So wow. During the class was 3 hours, 8 sessions once a week. So wait, 1 3-hour session once a week for 8 weeks. Yeah. And we would, the first session, we just like talked about sketch, watched a bunch of things, talked about the sketches like that we watched on YouTube. And then, yeah, our homework for the first week was 3 blackouts and then brought those in the next week. The first half, I think we spent, the first half we spent reading those and giving feedback. And then the second half of the class, we spent talking about the next format. So we would watch commercials and then talk about the commercial format and then wrote those for homework. So yeah.
So you came out of that class with like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
First drafts at least.
Yeah. There was 1 week that the homework was to do a rewrite. So just to get, you know, practice taking feedback and incorporating it. But yeah, so 7. Yeah. And we did a topical one. We did receptionist, shopkeeper, you know, all the big things.
So
game,
I mean,
show.
So you mentioned that you probably saw like an ancestry.com commercial.
Like, I don't know.
Do you remember that like light bulb of, hey, this could be an idea?
I really don't. It's so old. And who knows how long that idea was sitting in my note on my phone too. Like I have things in there. I mean, I think Wisely just uploaded them to a Google Doc from my phone so that I can dump them in there so that I don't know what the cloud is, to be honest, but just in case.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really don't remember the light bulb, but I obviously thought it was funny enough to write down.
What triggered you to enroll in this class?
I was an improviser for a while by the time I started Sketch.
Okay.
And I started improvising in 2015 at UCB in New York while I was in school in New York City. And I mean, loved improv, loved the, you know, learning about it, studying it, watching good improv. And there are obviously similarities between improv and sketch when you like look at the outcome. So I wanted to kind of build my skill set and fill my toolbox with skills, I guess, for ways to turn all of the things in my note and my phone into content. And I thought sketch was a good way to do that to start. I love taking classes. So like I took a stand-up class last year, freaking loved it. And again, I like see that as another tool, right? To kind of get all my ideas out into the world in a format that makes sense for them, for those jokes or whatever.
So yeah. you took UCB in New York City. How far along in that progression, like of the UCB like structure, did you get to?
So I worked through like 401 improv, and that's like their core curriculum, and was approved for advanced study. And then I didn't take any advanced formats actually, but took like a character class and a couple of other little random workshops and things. So I feel like that happened pretty soon before I graduated, and then that's when I moved to DC.
There, like, when you get to DC from New York City, is there a sense of relief when you find that there is a comedy scene there?
Yeah, I expected there to be one, but have been welcomed, or had been welcomed in so like excitedly, which made me feel really good, because I think comedy, when I moved to a new place, comedy has been the way to kind of be new people. So it was really nice to just, I took a Herald class at Wit at Washington Improv Theater, and met a few friends who are still really good friends of mine now, which is awesome. And yeah, kind of just got involved in that way. It was an interesting shift because there's such an intense competitiveness in New York that you don't see in DC, which also means, you know, different caliber of comedy in certain ways. But like, I ultimately think the comedy that you're producing with people who have full-time jobs that are very stressful or complicated or, you know, require so much of their time and energy, to make comedy with those people brings such a like holistic, I don't know if holistic's the right word, but like it's very whole, right? They're bringing their whole self into their work in a way that I didn't see in New York. So that was like a really cool shift as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting way that you put it. And I don't think I've ever thought about it that way, where in those big cities, you know, like I don't want to totally dump on New York City by itself. So I'll include LA and Chicago in those, where the path of doing like the comedy classes and getting involved in that way is a means to an end, like career wise, that it might not necessarily be when you go to the slightly smaller major cities like Philadelphia, Washington, Seattle. Like I'm just thinking of like cities that I have friends in, but like where we're doing it as a passion, as a not necessarily as a next step or necessarily career motivated.
Yeah, definitely. Like I was in classes with people with really successful in New York with like, they're like fully actors full time. That's how they get, you know, and they were like, yeah, they told me I should take an improv class. They meaning like their agent or whoever. I'm like, what? that's very cool. But also like just a totally different, you know, world from improvising with a human rights attorney who doesn't get any sleep and just is trying to blow off some steam because they need to laugh. They need to laugh once a week, which is totally fair. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I made the joke with, it might actually have been Bobby, about like joining a bowling league or a softball team, but instead we go and write and produce comedy shows.
Yeah.
As our,
it's the best
blow off. All right, before we get too too deep into the current, let's go all the way back. What were you a fan of growing up? Like, what were your earliest memories of comedy?
Yeah. Whose Line Is It Anyway? That's like one of my earliest memories. I was a 90s kid, so like, I feel like that show, I don't even know how often it was on, but I remember it.
That first couple seasons, I feel like they really oversaturated at moments.
Yeah. I just thought it was so impressive how they came up with things on the spot, and not only came up with things, but that they were so hilarious. And then like SNL was big in my house as well. And I feel like it was, you know, the Tina Fey, Amy Poehler prime, that crew, Jimmy Fallon, Horatio Sands. And then like Maya Rudolph, you know, I don't need to name the names, but yeah, just like when I think of prime SNL, I think of when I was a kid, because that was so inspiring to me.
Like how much of a kid are you with that cast?
Like how old am I?
Yeah, roughly.
I'm 28 now, so I was like a young girl being like, oh my gosh, these women are so amazing.
So I think one of the old writers, like one of the guys that was there in the first season, always says that like your favorite cast is roughly when you're like a high school junior, I think he says.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's
what I was trying to think of the math. But at the same time, like I have I have a real fondness for that cast that I first started watching with, which was that previous cast of like Will Ferrell, Chris Kattan, Anna Gasteyer, like that Molly Shannon, that era. Like,
yeah.
But I started watching the show when I was 10 or 11. So I understand. I ask everybody, so I'll ask you now. Who's your favorite SNL cast member all time?
Oh, goodness. That's not a fair question to ask anyone. It feels like such a cop-out to say Tina Fey.
It's not.
She's such an icon. And it's like, duh. I just always saw her humor as like the kind of things, like jokes she was writing, I was always like blown away by. Like so heady and intellectual sometimes, but like I feel like a lot of her stuff she's writing for other comedians in a way. Not like in a bad way, because I don't like necessarily when people aren't writing for their room or for their audience, but I just like when you look at 30 Rock, there's a joke every line, everything
it's
that is
dense,
said is a
yeah.
joke. It is so impressive. And I remember like seeing her doing Weekend Update. I was like, oh my God, I want to do that. How do I do that? These jokes, like that kind of joke writing is so fun to me. And that kind of performing is also fun. Like almost, it was more appealing than like being a cast member and being in all of the sketches.
Yeah.
Because that seemed really stressful. I was like, this woman, she's so smart. It's just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy to like, to think because, you know, she and Jimmy Fallon do Update together, like that first season. And she's the first woman to have done Update in however, like in my lifetime for sure. And she just crushes it so immediately. Like there might be like a couple of weeks where she doesn't necessarily have that persona down.
Yeah.
But they click pretty quickly. And then Jimmy leaves. And then it's Tina and Amy.
Dream team.
And they're an even better partnership than Tina and Jimmy were. So yeah, it's fantastic. Did you see that they're going on tour together?
I did. And everyone in my life has also told me to make sure that I saw.
Well, yeah, I got the email. I was like, oh, this is happening. And then I saw where they're going. I was like, oh, why'd they pick those places? Like,
I haven't actually looked at the list.
I think
is
the closest to us is like Atlantic City.
Huh.
And I'm like, well, there might be like a Boston or something, but
interesting.
They're only doing like four or five shows. So I'm hoping it's just a test run to see if they like doing it to do more.
It's good news for the world.
Yeah. So what gets you to the point of wanting to take a class? Like, I mean, I'm assuming you're in college. What motivates you to do that first improv class at UCB?
I was one of those kids who did everything in high school and was so overwhelmed, but also like overscheduled because I didn't know what else to do with myself. Still do that, working on it with my therapist. But I loved theater. I went to NYU, ended up studying public health, but I auditioned for Tisch for musical theater and the acting programs after my freshman year. Didn't work out, unsurprisingly, looking back. At the time, I was like, what? You know, I thought I was
Did you
so
do stuff
talented.
In like high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Musicals and plays and chorus and band and all the things. Yeah.
Do you have like a favorite role from your high school days?
I played. I think my favorite show that I was in was Spelling Bee, 25th annual Spelling Bee. So good.
That's one of my
favorite
shows.
I was Marcy Park, which was super fun. Yeah, I think that's the one.
I think I've made the comment that because I have no musical talent whatsoever, but I'm pretty sure I could be a pretty solid vice principal punch. Because I don't think he sings enough for me to worry about that.
I don't remember.
Like, I can just be the joke guy on the side. I think I can handle that.
Yeah. Nice. Well, best of luck to you.
It's never going to happen.
A little local theater in Philly.
Although, one of our theaters in Philadelphia is doing Putnam County in June. So, I'm actually pretty excited to, like,
Are you in it?
No. No. I'm pretty excited to take my nephews because it is one of my favorite shows.
Nice. Yeah, it's great.
So turn him on to the shows that I like. So yeah, all right. So in college, you try out for Tisch. You don't get in.
LOL.
So you pivot towards UCB.
Yeah. Actually, in the room. So I sang two songs for my audition. I sang Climbing Uphill from The Last 5 Years.
Okay.
And Somewhere That's Green from Little Shop. And after I sing the Little Shop song, one of the people on the panel was like, have you ever done musical improv? And I was like, no. But I wanted to do musical improv because I sing everything, even when I'm just trying to, I hear someone say something and then I sing it and then I try to rhyme it and whatever. It's just like it's a quirk. It's kind of probably annoying, but I think it's fun, so I'll never stop. Yeah, so I was like, oh, that's interesting that you said that. Like, you saw in my performance that comedy, like being the funny, is more important to me than maybe like the seriousness of what that song is actually about. So that was just like a moment for me. And I already knew I like was interested in that kind of stuff, but I think that pushed me to kind of actually pursue it and did some research, found UCB. I'm sure also the Amy Poehler thing like drew me to
That,
UCB, if I'm
because
being
I'm
honest.
always curious too about like the people in New York City. I don't want to say it's necessarily like a tribalism thing, but I'm curious about how someone decides to go the UCB route versus going to the Pitt versus going to Magnet. Like,
Yeah.
why pick the one theater's program over the other?
Yeah, I think I mean UCB at the time at least was the
The one.
like the one. Obviously Magnet, Pitt, all of these theaters, the new theaters in New York that I don't even know about, are doing phenomenal work, teach great classes. I think at the time people would say go to Magnet for musical improv specifically because their program's better. Like there are
Yeah.
always the little intricacies of like which one does what better. But when it comes to game, which is so important to me as a writer and improviser, like UCB was really the format, or rather the philosophy that I was really drawn to. Yeah.
Okay, so you go through the improv curriculum at UCB. Life moves you to Washington, D.C.
Yes.
How do you find out about Dojo Comedy?
So I met with the then educational director of Washington Improv Theater, just to be like, hey, this is my background. I'd love to get more involved in comedy
Okay,
stuff.
so
I just like cold emailed
all right, so
Jonathan.
how did you know about Wit? How did you find out about them? Like,
I just like Googled it. I really think I just was like, all right, I need comedy. I don't
please
know what.
be, please have some improv here in
Yeah.
my new hometown.
So I probably just Googled Washington, D.C. improv and like Wit probably was the first thing that came up. So I just emailed Jonathan and was like, hi, here's my background. Can we meet for coffee? And he said, I would love to. So he kind of gave me the lay of the land, which was helpful, and did mention Dojo. So I think I heard, yeah, I heard from him like what my options were, which was super helpful to just have someone lay it out for me. So then I signed up for a Herald class at Wit, and still, that was in 2018. So it was still a full year before I did any sketch.
Okay. Are you performing much with Wit in that meantime? Like, are you getting on stage?
At the beginning, no. I was so overwhelmed with work that I like, and just adjusting to a new city, it took me a while to get into it,
Yeah.
to have like the extracurricular for real and like actually put time and energy into it. So I started performing with Heavy Rotation. Do you know Heavy Rotation? It's an
No.
improvised rock comedy. So it's
Oh, okay,
musical
nice.
improv, but rock music in DC. And so that's a Wit special project. It's like a kind of like an ensemble and kind of like a house team, kind of neither in both of those. So I started performing with Heavy Rotation, which was super fun. I don't remember when that was. Probably also 2019 or 2018, 2019. So that was like my big thing. And then I also did I had like an improv duo with a friend. We called ourselves Trombone Shorty, which I forgot until someone texted that to me the other day. I was like, oh, LOL.
Wait,
totally forgot that's what we were called.
What was it?
Trombone shorty.
Trombone,
like the instrument.
Like, but like the band Trombone Shorty.
Oh yeah, we totally didn't realize that at the time either. It was a fucking weird coincidence. Can I say fuck on you?
Yeah,
I've said it twice now. It's a coincidence that no one ever would have expected to happen, because who would say those two words consecutively on purpose?
How did you put those two together then? If you didn't know about musician,
it came up one day that I played trombone throughout childhood and into high school. I don't know where the shorty came from. Maybe my partner did know trombone shorty existed and I didn't. I don't know. I feel like I'm my answer to all your questions is I don't know, but
that's fine. I'll edit a couple of those I don't know's out.
Okay, awesome.
Okay, so you take that first sketch comedy class.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot to ask this when we were talking about, you know, coming up with the idea of the sketch. So I'll ask now, how did it go in the room reading it in that class setting?
I think it was good. I'm such a, like, I keep a lot of paperwork that I shouldn't keep. Like, it's probably not the best, but I'm sure that I have this sketch somewhere with my notes on it.
Oh, I probably have my sketch 101.
Okay.
I probably have a file somewhere on my bookshelf. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
But I remember people received it well and were just like excited to give feedback.
Was this ever produced? Like, did you ever do it on stage or?
No.
Filmed?
It hasn't been looked at since then.
Since that class.
Until I dug it up just for you.
That's fair. That's good too. Okay.
I see it on screen though. Like the commercial, I feel like, yeah, I'd for sure see. Maybe I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll rewrite it, but yeah.
So what's the next step sketch-wise after you take that first dojo class?
We have a showcase for the class, which is fun. And then I took sketch one again, just because there wasn't a sketch two at the time and I wanted to do it again. And then Murphy, the dojo founder, owner, etc., had like an idea for a holiday series for sketch shows.
Mm-hmm.
So Bobby and I both wrote for the Halloween show in 2019, which was a killer show. Like, we talked about reviving it. Like, it was awesome and it felt really good to perform in and be a part of and write for. That's where I wrote the feminist witch rap, which if you haven't watched it, I can send it to you. It's what it sounds like, a feminist witch rap. And then I made it into a music video. And then that was 2019. So 2020 came around and we all know what happened then. But we tried to do some online shows through Dojo and successfully did a couple. And things just, you know, people got tired, people got busy, people got burnt out, people moved away, including myself, you know. But yeah, Bobby and I wanted to keep writing. So I think we just like wanted to be writing partners / accountability buddies.
So that's what I'm curious about. Like, what was it about, like, in this class of people? How do you and Bobby connect and want to work together more?
I don't know. You know, when you take a class and there's really only a couple people who you're like, I actually vibe with you. It was like always the weirdos, you know, which is fine. We're doing comedy. We're all weirdos.
Yes.
But not everyone like vibes with everyone else. Some people like seem to be way less interested in actually being there than other people, which I always find interesting. Like, no one's forcing you to take this class,
right? It's always confusing to me, especially I mean I took I took sketch 101 here in Philadelphia 11 or 12 years ago at this point, but it was so curious to me to see this idea of like, oh, I'm the office cut up, I'm like there were maybe, there was like 12 people in my class. Six people wanted to get on stage, and six of them just were like, ha, 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 I'm the funny one at office, so I was told to take this. But right. My stuff is trash and not and not funny.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and then you never see those people ever again.
Right. Like,
it's so bizarre to me for someone to take a class like this. Like, improv kind of makes sense because you go and you do improv and you have fun. But with a sketch comedy class like this, you have homework. And yeah. I was always told as a kid that one of the great things about being an adult is that you don't have homework anymore. You know, like,
yeah.
So I'm always curious about like those certain people that take a class where you actively have to do more stuff after you leave.
And I mean, I get it, right? Not liking a class is like, it's a good thing to learn about yourself. If you think you're going to like it and you don't like it, fine. But when they're in it, I'm like, okay, you're unenthusiastic. Great. I'm not going to ask you to hang out and write, you know. And I think part of it was also we would go out after and grab a drink. Like a few of us from the class would go grab drinks after. And I like remember Bobby pretty much always went, and I pretty much also always went. So it's just about building a relationship. Like he was my friend first.
Yeah.
And then we were like, hey, why don't we also write? Because that's what brought us together. Yeah.
You had mentioned, you know, like the idea of the pandemic after those class, like after those shows. So what is it like on your side to take these classes, meet someone that you want to continue a creative partnership with, and then the world shuts down where there wasn't much you could do other than generate your material?
Frustrating, and like a little demoralizing. So you're like, you get excited about a thing and then this unprecedented thing happens and you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Obviously much worse things happened. But yeah, I think it's hard enough for a lot of creative people to like be motivated to keep producing content when everything is going well. So add on the fact that, you know, there's a pandemic, people are realizing nothing matters and everything's fake, and we're all doing this to ourselves. Capitalism is raging and whatever, screw it. Which you can say, screw it, nothing matters, I'm never doing anything fun or creative again. Or you can say, screw it, what's the point of not doing all these fun things?
Yeah.
Like, if this brings you any ounce of joy, do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where he and I found our like mutual desire to be partners in something like this. Because it was just too much to not do it, right? We needed something to make us laugh. Even if the sketches we wrote never went anywhere, just worth it.
How would you describe what a Lots of Feelings show has turned into?
We often say eye-watering and mouth-watering sketches. I get what that means, but it's just a funny, silly little thing. I think Lots of Feelings is just me and Bobby trying to figure out what the hell is going on in the world. And what sketches kind of articulate those feelings, or thoughts, but more often feelings. Like the essence of a sketch might not be, I would say this plot of a sketch might not be relatable to either of us, but the essence of the sketch is. Like, and I think that connects back to what I was saying before about having, you know, different tools in my toolbox to articulate these different things. So Sketch with Bobby with Lots of Feelings has been like, I'm feeling this thing, there's no way I'm alone in this. Let's put it into a sketch and see if other people agree.
Yeah. I'm always curious about team names. And I mean, we've already talked about your trombone shorty thing. Like, what does Lots of Feelings come from? Where?
So it came, our first show that we did in DC was in July, I think, of 2022. And the show was called Lots of Feelings. Our team name was Bobby and Elizabeth or whatever. Our second show, which was in November, was Lots More Feelings. We were like, it's a sequel. And then we decided, let's just call us Lots of Feelings.
Just keep going with it.
We're Lots of Feelings. Maybe we'll have a show called Five Stages of Grief. I don't know. First thing I thought of. But yeah, I feel like our sketch style isn't going to change anytime soon, at least not dramatically, right? We're both two weirdos who find weird things funny, and also who feel a lot and like to use sketch as kind of that outlet. So we are Lots of Feelings. We have lots of feelings. Why not call ourselves Lots of Feelings?
So now that life has now taken you out of Washington, D.C. and you're back into upstate New York, first off, is there a scene where you are? Like, have you found an improv show or anything up there at all?
So, not very much improv or sketch or comedy. Mm-hmm. We have like a really amazing local arts center, and we also have like a writing center. So they teach classes. Sometimes they have an improv class. Sometimes they have maybe a sketch class. I'm not sure. But there are classes you can take, whether that's a one-time workshop, or maybe they have like series, you know, 8 weeks or whatever. I haven't been involved in those because I'm from here. So I also like have friends, and I also love to do sports. So I meet friends that way as well. And because I feel like my DC comedy community, it still feels like my community in a way. That's not to say I can't have multiple. I just like haven't felt the need to go into this community for comedy when I already have, you know, a community that I call home. But I do want to do a show here really badly, because I know my friends would come and they keep asking me, when are you going to do a show here? And I'm like, I don't know. Let's get Bobby up here.
I think I did say to Bobby that with all the traveling that you've done going back down to DC, it is only right that he reciprocates and does something up there. Yeah. But then that asked me the other question is, you're up there in New York. He lives in DC. How has the dynamic changed with the distance?
We weren't really writing together, just the two of us, when we both lived there in DC.
Yeah.
But I think the dynamic works. Like, obviously it'd be nice to meet in person once a week, but it's fine. You know, I'll come down before a show like 3 days before and we'll just rehearse a ton, and it's exhausting, but it's also fun because it's the two of us and like we enjoy it. Although every time we're in the middle, we're like, this is horrible. I hate it. What am I doing?
Yeah. That's true.
And then though, at the end, we're like, oh my God, I can't wait for our next show. So, yeah, I think it works. It's not ideal, but it's not the worst thing in the world either, you know?
I never thought of it this way, too. I said it a lot.
Where I'm I'm opening your eyes so
like wide in high school theater and stuff, you have that hell week. You know, for that last week before you put on the show, and you've basically extended that into sketch comedy too, like of coming, of coming down to a new, back to your old like hometown and really rushing to make sure the show is as good as it can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've given yourself homework and hell week.
Yeah. I was a kid who overscheduled and was always anxious and overwhelmed, and yeah, I have to be doing something. Again, working on it, but I like it. I like feeling like I'm doing things.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad hobby to have, or whatever you want to call it. It's a great
diversion.
There
are worse things.
There are absolutely worse things. With your more musical background, does that play a role in your sketch comedy now?
Definitely. We have a few songs that have been written and performed, which are super, super fun. Bobby plays guitar and ukulele. And I play guitar and ukulele and like my new egg shaker, which has been my percussion egg, which has been super fun. Since I bought it, I can't stop just shaking the egg. So yeah, it's great. We have some songs that are like it's like a starts as a sketch and then it goes into song. And then we have some that just are songs that stand alone. We have one song that's kind of like a runner throughout the show, like the last show we did. It was like three separate beats that escalate and all that. But yeah, definitely plays a part. I love singing on stage, but I also would prefer that people be laughing than just observing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand the idea of like live drama, because I don't. How does the cast members know that they're doing well if no one's laughing? Like that's always terrifying. A curious thing to me. Like,
I need the social cue.
So I asked this about people that do sketch comedy and stand up. So I'll ask this about sketch comedy and musical comedy. How do you decide what path a certain idea goes? Like, is there a thought process that you have?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't call it a process as much as I just go with my gut. Like, I have a note on my phone of funny ideas, and then I have a separate note called stand up. Because I like to write in the style of stand up, but don't perform stand up that much, but would like to more. And within the funny note on my phone, I also have song ideas. So like, I'll think of something and I'll be like, oh, that'd be a funny song. But maybe when I talk to Bobby, I'm like, I have this song idea, but actually maybe it's better as a sketch. Like, I don't know if I can articulate what I want to articulate in the song. If that makes the most sense. And like, also there's not one path. I think a fun exercise to do one day for myself, you're welcome to do it, would be like, take one thing that's funny and write a blackout with the idea, write a song with the idea, write a receptionist shopkeeper with that idea, like push the idea to its limit and like see how you can maneuver it into different forms. I think that'd be super fun to do. But yeah, I kind of just go with my gut, but also talk it through with Bobby. Yeah.
The idea of taking an idea and kind of like manipulating them into the different tropes and formats that sketch has created is really interesting, because like sitting in with one particular idea multiple times feels like you're either going to hate the idea at the end or really gain a wealth of material from it. And I don't think there's no middle ground in my idea in that to me. It's either going to be a really good experience or a really awful one.
Right. Even when I'm writing one sketch and editing it a bunch, I hate that sketch by the end, if it is funny.
I've never performed a sketch I still like.
Yeah, like. Bobby and I. Yeah. Bobby and I talk about this all the time before we get on stage. We're like, these all suck, right? These aren't funny anymore.
We've worked them too hard.
Yeah.
I'm tired of them,
And then people laugh, so it's great. But yeah, it's hard to know by the time you get there.
Yeah, hopefully the people that haven't seen this 10 times already and rehearsed it for the last 48 hours nonstop find something delightful that we no longer find delightful.
Yep.
So I mean, you mentioned doing stand-up and like you're not doing it as much as you would like. Are there like bar shows that you could do up there?
Yeah, there's one venue who has like very sporadic open mics. I haven't done one yet because of travel, mostly. That's really the reason. I would like to do that. It's on my 2023 list of things I want to do, to perform a show here. Yeah. There's also, I believe that I could like book a bar and for a night and just do stuff and yeah. People would come because they're my friends. So that could be fun.
Yeah. It's fun that you're in a spot where you necessarily haven't done enough shows, where you haven't worn out your friend equity yet, where they would still be excited to see you.
Yes, I know. Every time I go to DC for a show, I'm like, you know, texting the same people. I'm like, hey, have another show. Please, it's don't feel like you need to come.
Completely different than what you've done seen before.
Yeah.
But it's okay if you don't want to.
Right. Please. Yeah. Do what you want. But it's when Bobby and I, like, we're trying to make a show. Actually, we're thinking about performing at Edinburgh Fringe, which is a big deal.
It is.
But we're trying to make an hour-long show that we can do at festivals and stuff. Like right now, we have probably an hour and a half of material. Not an hour and a half of good material, but it's material we've performed in the past. So our goal is to, you know, make a show that we can do over and over again. Which was all to say, the friend, what we were talking about before, like our friends wanting to come see us or not. Eventually we'll have a good show. And I want everyone to see that final product, but it's like, yeah, running out of people to kind of test things on.
Yeah. I didn't think about this earlier, so I want to ask this now. Have you noticed a difference in the comedy audiences of the two cities?
I feel like the crowds in DC are people who want to come see their friends succeed. And the crowds in New York are other comedians who are just there because they also have shows and they also have to be in the room waiting for their own set. So I did a lot of shows in New York that were just like fucking miserable. You know, people didn't want to be laughing at other people, as if like laughing, as if there's a finite number of laughs you can give. Like right. It was just so brutal.
And yeah, I was like, whatever laughs I give you now, whatever laughs I give you now will negate whatever laughs I get when I do my
set. Yeah, and it's like, no, let's all just be happier. Or not, but like, don't, you know, just, yeah. So I did a lot of shows where like no one wanted to actually be there and no one wanted to support each other. And it was just like hell. And I'm like, I'm paying to do this. Why am I paying to do this? Like, I spent so much money on improv. It's ridiculous. But I loved it. Like, that's the other thing. I loved my team and I, you know, I liked performing with them and I learned a lot. But yeah. Then the audiences in DC, I think you're rare. I don't know. In my experience, at least, I feel like I've rarely been performing for a room full of other comedians. Like, maybe I'm just not at the divey bars where like that's happening, but it's felt like people bought a ticket. They're, you know, brought a friend with them. They're having a night out. They got dinner. They're seeing a show. They're going to get drinks after. Like, this is what they're doing that evening. And they want to have fun. And they want to support the people on stage because they're doing something brave that they would never want to do. You know, like, so yeah, definitely a different vibe. Or maybe I'm just not deep enough in it to like have met the miserable people in DC. But I don't think that's, I really don't think that's happening as much as in New York.
So, and as we're winding down, as we're finishing up, I asked basically the same two questions. First off, you know, you'd gone through the improv curriculum at UCB, did some stuff with Wit, did some stuff with Dojo. What's a piece of advice that you would give to a new sketch writer?
No idea is too stupid. Write it, do it. like right before this, Bobby sent me a text and it was a really, really stupid idea, but it made me laugh out loud. And I was like, please write it. It's so dumb. I love it. You know, like almost the stupider, the better. Like there's a story about a TV show that I don't remember which TV show it is. So it's not that important, but the writers in the room, in the writer's room, like would spend hours laughing their ass off about these ideas. And they're like, okay, we got to get back to like writing this episode,
yeah.
You know? And it's like, wait a minute. We just sat here laughing for hours about this silly idea. Why isn't that the episode? Like, follow the laughs, follow what's funny, follow what feels true and hilarious to yourself. And like, that's what you want to be writing, you know? Format and all of that stuff matters a lot too. Obviously it's like good to have the foundation of skills. So like take the classes, but don't get too caught up in that to like, you know, remember to have fun with it and be inspired by the small, silly things.
Yeah. I think the fact that Bobby can text you a dumb idea and you're on board is a sign of a good partnership, of good comedy partnership. Because like, if I text a dumb idea to one of my civilian friends, they won't like, and they don't get it. I was like, oh, well, I can never write with you. Like,
right.
That's why. Yeah. That's why you're
or
not the comedian.
Or worse. Oh, that's a stupid idea. I'm not going to write it at all. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's the last thing we should be doing is, you know, throwing ideas away. It's hard enough to come up with good ideas.
It is, for sure. And then finally, with, I mean, you mentioned how in New York with your friends up there, you're doing more sports and stuff as a time, as your hobby, how you spend some time. But otherwise, why comedy? Like, why has comedy hooked you in since basically college, pursuing making other people laugh?
So I was at Edinburgh Fringe last year just for watching, and it was amazing. And there's a comedian, Glenn Moore, who he does stand up, and he articulated something that I don't think, like, I don't know when I would have come to that on my own, but he has a memory of being a kid and doing something which the room full of adults thought was cute or funny or whatever, and they laughed at him. And like, I've had those experiences too. As like a kid, you say something and like you think it's a totally normal thing to say, but all the adults in the room laugh. So he said he likes to do comedy because he likes what laugh, like being laughed at, feels like, but he also wants to be in control.
Yeah,
he wants to know why the people are laughing. And I feel very similarly. Like, I've spent so many hours of my life agonizing over awkward conversations I have, or like, why was that group of people kind of like snickering and looking at me in middle school? Like, what were they talking about? What was it? I love feeling like I've brought joy to someone, but I loathe not knowing why.
Yeah.
And like, I like being in control, but I also like having the audiences like I'm in control, but they're also in control in a way. Like, it's like this back and forth, but I like building a relationship with audiences. Yeah, I think that's the main reason, is just like laughing with, not laughing at. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good to be in control of why someone else is enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
Like,
amazing.
It's a really fun rush, for sure. All right. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, as one half of Lots of Feelings, will be performing at Bad Medicine Presents this Saturday, March 18th at the DC Improv in the Lounge in Washington, D.C. Two shows, 7 p.m., 9:30.
Tickets are available at dcimprov.com. You can follow Lots of Feelings on Instagram at LOFSketch. And you can follow Elizabeth at Leffing Out Loud. LEFFING Out Loud. Lots of Feelings is sharing the bill with Amanda Zeller, who was a guest on the podcast last fall. So if you want to catch up, check out episode 181. Amanda was at Philly Sketchfest last October and was such a fun act. If you're going to Bad Medicine Presents, you're in for a treat. Sketchybater, our sketch comedy open mic, returns to Zoom on Friday, March 24th at 10 p.m. in the East. The live, in-person Sketchybater returns to Tattooed Mom here in Philly on Sunday, May 7th at 2 p.m. Sketchybater.com for all the details on those. My First Sketch is a Philly Sketchfest production. You can find out more information at phillysketchfest.com. Follow Philly Sketchfest on Instagram at Philly Sketchfest. The music on this episode is by the band No-No, which you can check out at nonoband.bandcamp.com. Like My First Sketch on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get the podcast. This is Josh Hyam. Thanks for listening. Go see some comedy.